The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning, and welcome to this online service, online worship service of Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. Today, we're pretty close to you. We're meeting with you in your own home. We want to welcome you wherever you are on your life journey, wherever you are on your spiritual journey, whomever you love, whatever your gender or gender expression. We invite you into this ever-expanding circle of love, compassion, and justice. I'm Reverend Larry Piers, minister at Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. And if you're a visitor with us today, you'll notice there's an opportunity for you to fill out a virtual visitor card, which will appear in our chat box. And you can do that at any time during this service. Today, we will also have an opportunity for those of you who are visiting to meet with a few of our members in a breakout room following the worship service. And this is just an opportunity to have some informal conversation for us to get to know you and for you to get to know a little bit more about us. So welcome to this service. My opening words are a reminder that the focus of this service is healing and the paths of healing. So let's gather in such a way that we can hold a healing space together, where we can be wholly here. Some of us are here holding a joy in our heart. Let that joy shine within you and radiate from you as a light into this healing circle. Some of you are holding a pain or some suffering. Let that suffering come just a little closer to the surface, to be acknowledged if only by yourself, but also to be held here by those who care for you. Some of you may be possessed by thoughts and thinking that we want to invite you to just kind of relinquish during this hour, to let them go and to enter into the place that's at the edge of your opinions, that place of imagination where you might find healing. Some of us are carrying the pains of others for those that we care for, and so we want to care alongside of you. Knowing that we are all interrelated, we can all rejoice in another's joy, we can all carry another's pain, and we can hold a space for being whole and for being a healing circle. So with that, let us welcome one another to this time of worship. Sally Bertolotsky was going to be lighting our chalice today, and unfortunately, she had a fall. I think she's okay, but she wasn't sure that she could make it to today. And so someone else will be lighting our chalice. And so I turn to that person now. I'm not sure exactly who it will be, but go ahead. It's Preston. Okay. So unmute yourself.
That would be me, Larry. Thank you. Great. Thank you. Our chalice lighting reading this morning is entitled Teach My Heart Healing Words, written by Reverend Samuel Trumbore. Teach my heart healing words. Show me the words that help rather than harm. Instruct me in the verbs that bring energy, the nouns pointing to the real, the adjectives describing your subtleties. Reveal to me how words can be offered in a way that connects rather than separates, that develops trust and eschews suspicion, that opens the heart and relaxes the mind. Amen. And now I will light the peace lamp. You will repeat after me. and with all the people of the world. May peace be with us and with all the people,
with all the people of the world.
I really love Preston's capacity to be in two places at once so quickly, in his own home and at the fellowship. That's just amazing. That's just one of the amazing feats that Preston is able to do. So thank you, Preston, for doing that. We're going to join together now in our opening song, which is actually a very short song. It's only a little over a minute. Some of you may know this. It's called "I Know This Rose Will Open." And it's written by a friend of mine, Mary Gregolia. So join in as you feel ready, and let's sing together this song. The lyrics will be on the screen.
I know this rose will open. I know my fear will burn away. I know my soul will unfurl its wings.
So I came across a story that I was really fascinated with. And so I want to tell you this story. It's entitled "The Telling the Bees." So there was a time in almost all of rural Britain, a British families kept bees. And they followed what would appear to us to be a very strange tradition. Whenever there was a death in the family, someone had to go out to the hives and tell the bees of the terrible loss that had befallen the family. Failing to do so often resulted in further losses, as the story goes, such as the bees leaving the hive or not producing enough honey or even dying. Traditionally, the bees were kept abreast of not only deaths, but also important family matters, including births, marriages, and long absences due to journeys. So if the bees were not told, all sorts of calamities were thought to happen. This peculiar custom is known as telling the bees. Now, the practice of telling the bees may have its origin in Celtic mythology that held that the bees were the link between our world and the spirit world. So if you had any message that you wished to pass along to someone who was dead, all you had to do was tell the bees, and they would pass along the message. Maybe that was the original long distance call, who knows? The typical way to tell the bees was for the head of the household or the good wife of the house to go out to the hives, knock gently to get the attention of the bees, and then softly murmur in a doleful tone the solemn news. Little rhymes developed over the centuries specific to a particular region. In Nottinghamshire, the wife of the dead was heard singing quietly in front of the hive, "The master's dead, but don't you go. Your mistress will be a good mistress to you." In Germany, a similar couplet was heard, "Little bee, our Lord is dead. Leave me not in my distress." Seems like a very strange kind of custom to us in our modern era. But I suspect that for many of us, having a place to tell what's actually in our heart, what's happening in our lives, and to be able to let go of it and send it forth might be a very helpful and very healthy kind of practice. We know that the relationship between bees and humans goes beyond superstition, however. It's a fact that bees help humans survive. 70 of the top 100 crop species that feed 90% of the human population rely on bees for pollination. Perhaps many of you know that. So without them, without these bees, these plants would cease to exist, and without it, all the animals that eat those plants would also cease to exist or have a hard time. This can have a cascading effect, in other words, that would ripple catastrophically up the food chain. So losing a beehive is much worse than losing a supply of honey. The consequences are life-threatening. The act of telling the bees emphasizes this deep connection that humans share with all of life and that humans share with these insects. So during the musical meditation that follows, we're gonna play a piece that has its origins in Chinese medicine. And during this musical piece, you might imagine your own imaginary conversation with the bees. Tell the bees what's happening in your own life right now. Tell the bees what's on your heart. So let's listen, and let's also practice a kind of a meditation that allows us to be present to what's happening in our own heart and in our own lives during this time.
Thank you.
So while I was training for the ministry, I made it through my hospital chaplaincy internship at the Massachusetts General Hospital with my eyes closed. Let me explain. For example, there was the time when the head nurse showed me around the day surgery unit and pointed out the overhead monitor where I could actually observe the procedure being done on the patient below. All I remember are the different colors of red and something that looked like it was pulsing and moving, but I closed my eyes. "Oh, you're praying," said the nurse. I nodded my head, still with my eyes closed. Or the time when all the chaplains were sitting in a room in the surgery area of MGH, and a doctor brought in an aluminum tray, just like the ones that you might use to bake cookies on. And however, on this tray, they had just removed the cancerous section of someone's colon, so it was fresh from surgery. I closed my eyes. This time I was praying for myself that I would not faint. Or the day that we were invited to observe an autopsy at Mass General Hospital. My fellow chaplaincy interns, they were just excited and thrilled and waiting in anticipation for the event. That morning, I closed my eyes as I slept in. Yes, I did have other opportunities to close my eyes in prayer as a chaplain. Since I was trained as a therapist prior to going into seminary and fulfilling this chaplaincy internship requirement, I met with patients and their families with wide-eyed confidence during those kinds of interactions. I sometimes closed my eyes in circumstances not to avoid squeamishness, but to sense the poignancy of the moment that was happening in the life of the patient or the family. To listen deeply, to hold space for what others were actually experiencing, to attend the best that I could to what the situation seemed to need. And then in silence and in words, offer understanding, comfort, and prayerful companionship and care the best I could. So over the years since my chaplaincy internship, I have actually accompanied or visited folks in emergency rooms or recovery rooms or hospital rooms. I've gotten over my initial squeamishness, and I discovered that I can even assist when absolutely necessary in medical emergencies. I'm not volunteering, by the way. I just want you to know that I've grown a bit since those earlier days. I still don't watch television shows, however, that feature graphic medical procedures. And if while watching a movie with limbs being cut off or graphic stabbing occurring or whatever, my spouse will tell you, I will often ask, why do they have to show it? And I'll close my eyes. I do, however, want to talk today about the paths of healing. But I want you to understand from the start that, as you can probably already guess, I'm doing so without any well-earned medical credentials. To begin, I want to make the necessary distinction in a conversation like this between curing and healing. Doctors can often help cure by the procedures that they do. Doctors can do what they do to nudge us towards healing. But the healing work is our own to do. So I want to make this distinction up front between curing and healing. Consider how often when the medical professions have done their thing, how much beyond that depends upon the patient who complies or not with their part of the healing process. Do they take their medications? Do they change their diets accordingly if needed? Do they alter their life patterns? Do they manage their stress? Do they attend to their emotions? And do they allow the help of their caregivers? In our high-tech medical world, we often imagine that medicine is like going into a repair shop, like a car repair shop, and we might get a part or two replaced. We might get a tune-up or a checkup, and then we're good to go until after several more miles, we might need to go in for another repair or tuning up again. However, this view of the body as a machine or this view of the brain as a computer is not only our own, it also guides much of modern medicine in the Western world. Now, don't get me wrong, there are indeed the wonders of modern medicine. I applaud those wonders. I appreciate all the ways that any of us in this room, so to speak, today might have been served by modern medicine. I know how to replace spark plugs, but I'm really not good at fixing engines. And so I really think that we need folks who have the skills and the capacities to do that work, to honor it and to really appreciate it. But our tendency, both among ourselves as well as some in our medical profession, to think of the body as a compilation of autonomous parts limits medical care. And also limits our own role in the partnership that we can have towards healing. I've learned about some of the shortcomings of modern medicine actually from some doctors whose writings have intrigued me. They write on what has been called slow medicine. So think about it for a moment. Think about the difference between fast food that you grab and go with and slow food that you thoughtfully prepare, cook, and eat. Maybe you'll get the idea of what I'm referring to here in terms of slow medicine. A lot of people experience modern medicine, not always, but sometimes as fast medicine. Shorter and shorter appointments, doctors staring at their computer screens even before telehealth became necessary. Doctors who are quick to dispense not only their pills, but even to dispense with the patient as quickly as possible. So one of these doctors that I've learned from is Dr. Virginia Sweet, who is now an associate clinical professor of medicine at the University of California in San Francisco. And she's appalled by some of the depersonalization of healthcare that she's observed in some of its technological, some of its institutional manifestations. And she has some firsthand experience of this, both as a doctor, but also as a family member who experienced her father being cared recently. In one of her books entitled Slow Medicine, The Way to Healing, she tells the personal story of what transpired when her father suffered a grand mal seizure and was hospitalized. On the incorrect impression that it was his first such incident and that he might have suffered a stroke. Now, some of you may know that if someone who experiences seizures regularly, that happens and it can sometimes be like a reboot for them. However, he was misdiagnosed as this being his first seizure. And so they put him on a kind of a regimen to look out for a stroke. And this misdiagnosis led to mistreatment. So Dr. Sweet summarizes the experience that she had in this way. She said, I'd known that healthcare was getting ever more bureaucratic, that doctors and nurses were spending more and more of their time in front of a computer screen entering healthcare data. I'd experienced it myself, but until that week, the week that her father was in the hospital, I had no idea how bad it had become. If I, as a physician, couldn't get appropriate care for a family member in a lovely community hospital with well-trained staff, who could? So after withdrawing him from the hospital, she ordered her father's electronic health records. And from that fateful week in the hospital, she was able to realize that the document, those records, were 812 pages long. And so she writes, it took me 4 hours to read. It began not with the doctor's notes, but with hundreds of pages of pharmacy orders, then hundreds of pages of nursing notes, which, by the way, were simply boxes checked. Only the doctor's notes were narrative, and mostly they were cut and paste. No wonder no one could figure out what was really going on. Still, to be fair, Although I found mistakes in the records, Father had, after all, gotten discharged, I had to admit, judging by those electronic health records, that his stay in the hospital looked to anyone else's appearance 100% quality assured. There was just something missing, she writes, and it was hard to put my finger on it. Everything looked so good in the computer, and yet what Father had gone through was not medicine, but healthcare. Medicine without a soul, she writes. What do I mean by soul? I mean what Father did not get. He did not get presence, attention, and judgment, or kindness. Above all, responsibility. Nobody took responsibility for the story. The essence of medicine is story. Finding the right story. Healthcare, on the other hand, deconstructs story to thousands of tiny pieces for which no one is responsible. A robot doctor could have cared for my father just as well, she says. So this account summarizes for me what I think we need to be able to understand in order to take part in our responsibility in the healing process for ourselves and for those that we care about. We need to reclaim our role in the healing process, to return some soul to medicine, some presence, some attention, some judgment, some kindness, and some co-responsibility. This is what led me to want to share with you the story of telling the bees this morning. As with any mythology, sacred or otherwise, there is usually some element of truth that is encoded in the story. Often think about folklore like this telling of the bees story, and even sacred scriptures as a dream that is open to interpretation and to meaning, but yet has some message encoded in it for us to discover again and again. Now, even though you would not catch me, tapping at the hive of the bees to tell them, we need to be able to speak the truth of our own lies, to tell the bees, even if there are no literal bees there to tell of our losses. Hold on for a second, I'm having a problem with my screen. Okay, we need to understand now more than ever the role that emotions play in our own healing process. We understand our own emotional well-being and our own physical well-being are not separate, but they're interrelated dimensions of the one human being that we are. We understand that we're not actually dissected into physical body here, emotional body over here, mental activity over there, that our healing process involves the intersection of all of these dimensions of ourself, and that healing can be accessed through many of these channels. Many religious traditions have always had this holistic understanding of the healing of a co-joined body, mind, and spirit through loving human relations, communal support, and individual will. Contemporary Jewish prayers for healing, such as this prayer by Rabbi Naomi Levy, talking from her book, Talking to God, Personal Prayers for Times of Joy, Sadness, Struggle, and Celebration, gives expression to not some miracle cure, but to actually accessing the inner healing resources that are there for us to tap. A prayer like this that she writes reminds us of these inner resources. When I feel tainted, God, remind me that I am holy. When I feel weak, teach me that I am strong. When I'm shattered, assure me that I can heal. When I am weary, renew my spirit. When I am lost, show me that you are near. Amen. I suspect that the practice of telling it to the bees served a similar purpose of reminding us of healing powers latent within us. I understand that an illness, no matter how minor or major, often does create a pause in our own lives these times become opportunities which, if we and our loved ones can really participate in them, can really be part of a healing process for us. These become pauses in which we can re-examine our priorities, which we can work with our anxieties and our stresses, where we can cherish what otherwise we may have taken for granted. Rabbi Julie Adler also puts it this way. I don't believe that healing, she writes, is necessarily a complete return to life as it was before the accident or the illness or the disability. Healing requires coming to terms with life as it is now. Life with struggle and sometimes chronic pain or discomfort, and life with the memory of what was. Healing requires work and strength and courage. Healing is a partnership among body, spirit, and soul, between humanity and the divine, the individual and the community. So in Judaism and in Christianity, there's been a long tradition of healing practices, most of which have fallen out of favor over time. These practices included fasting and prayer and rituals, which from my point of view probably did serve folks in terms of realigning our lives in some way. And what I've appreciated about some of the work of slow medicine is that it creates this opportunity for realignment as well. It complements whatever medical procedures are required and allows us to do the healing work within that pause by entering the narrative of our life in some new ways. So in this slow medicine approach, a checkup might include all the usual pulsing and prodding and poking, but it also includes more questions and conversations about our life and about the narrative of our own life. Michael Finkelstein, in his book, Slow Medicine, Hope and Healing for Chronic Illness, offers questions about a person's level of happiness or balance or peace or purpose. The checkup might focus on how well you are aligned with the natural rhythms and cycles, about the body, not just as a collection of autonomous parts, but as a whole entity inextricably linked to the elements of our mind and purpose, to questions about our past and our present hurts, about how present we are to the present moment, including our own relationships. For example, most doctors understand the role that inflammation can play in chronic disease. And of course, there are medications and foods that are anti-inflammatory and can be incorporated into a regime of healing. But in a slow medicine approach, in addition to that, there might also be additional conversations about the non-physical arenas of inflammation, such as one's emotional life, which sometimes can feel inflamed, or one's relationships, or one's past, something one's holding on to, or relationships, or some attention to the cooling rhythms of nature, of sleep, and just the beauty and calm within nature itself. The telling of the bee story contains a truth that our emotional and our relational life is important to our own well-being. The telling of the bee story holds the truth that our own attention to our own healing is actually part of the healing, not just of ourselves, but of the world. So as in the story, without bees, many plants would cease to exist, and with it, all animals that eat those plants. And that this can have a cascading effect that would ripple catastrophically up the food chain. So losing a beehive, as I said, is much worse than losing a supply of honey. The act of telling the bees emphasizes this deep connection that humans can share with the insect and with all of life. As Unitarian Universalists, we affirm and promote in our purposes and principles the interdependent web of all existence in which we are a part. This perspective has an impact on our own sense of well-being as well, I believe. Our neglect to transform the earth by our care not only has implications for our own current well-being, environmental toxins, the air that we breathe, the food that we eat, the water that we drink, but it also has implications for those we dishonor or marginalize and make more susceptible to the environmental toxins. Our attention to this interdependent web is also our care for the health of future generations. So from this perspective of the interdependent web of all existence, health is much broader than our individual health. It's also health of the earth, health for those who are impacted by environmental, the environmental crisis, health for future generations as well. Our personal healing also is connected to social healing as well. Telling the bees means speaking truth and experiencing the healing power of truth. This was demonstrated so clearly in South Africa following apartheid. Healing could not occur when the pains, the wounds, the real harms of an oppressive system were acknowledged, healing could only occur unless the pains, the wounds, the real harms of an oppressive system were acknowledged. That's why the process is called truth and reconciliation. There's no real reconciliation in South Africa or even in our own distressed country right now without telling truth as well. Of course, there will always be those who want to rush the process, who want to pretend that we can have premature unity, who feel we should simply play nice to those whose actions caused real harm. But healing really requires acknowledging the real harm that has been caused. We see it in this post-election time, those who are comfortable, those who are privileged, those who don't carry the wounds of oppression or suppression of their dignity, those who don't suffer the fear of their income and their health care being taken away, those who don't fear that their right to marry may be taken away from those can declare a time for healing, but it would be a pseudo healing unless we can also tell the bees, no, tell each other what actually has been happening, the harm, the pain, the suffering, the hurt that people have felt. We have to tell the truth alongside of the process of reconciliation. It's not one or the other, it's both. So this is a time for us to think about that healing in a much broader way. This is a time for us to recognize that we can't avoid some of the things that we may need to face, we may need to tell in order to be able to move through a process of reconciliation. Our own health requires that we not only tell it to the bees, but we tell it to the person directly. By saying, what you are saying or doing is painful to me when we experience some harm, some discounting, or what you are saying or doing is painful to those that I love or care about when we experience some being discounted, ignored, and so forth. So as Unitarian Universalists, we can tend to focus on individualism at the expense of our connection for the web, but our health includes the health of others and the health of our society. For those who can afford platinum health coverage, those who can pay out of pocket as they need to, it's not such a big deal to have their health care threatened. But for those who have to choose between food and medicine and selling the house they wanted to leave to their kids, it really does matter. So as Unitarian Universalists who are true to our tradition, we don't say that the spiritual is over here and the ethical is over there. We recognize a radical incarnation in which godliness and goodness means interconnectedness, a care for one another. So as we approach this Thanksgiving week, a most unusual Thanksgiving week that many of us probably have ever experienced due to the rampage of the coronavirus. As we enter this Thanksgiving week, let's bring to our awareness here and now that we don't need an illness or a disease to remind us to pause, to be grateful, to be appreciative for life as a whole. Abraham Heschel said it well, the truth of being human is gratitude. The secret of existence is appreciation. Its significance is revealed in reciprocity. Humankind will not die for lack of information, he said. It may perish for a lack of appreciation. So let's join now in a prayerful way with one another. Spirit of life and of love, abide with us. Help us to not take even this moment's breath for granted. Allow us to appreciate the miracle and the wonder of this human body, even when we or those we love are ill or in dis-ease. Even when we feel terrified or vulnerable, we know that body, mind, and spirit is a temple, a vessel for embodying the best of the spirit in the everyday life. To be healed is to know that we are also interrelated, that we depend upon one another each day, that we can care for ourselves, that we can care for one another, that we can care for the common health of all. We are thankful. We are appreciative of this life's breath and for our capacity to embody love, to work for justice, and to be part of the well-being, healing power in the world. So may it be. So this is the time now in our service where we pause to acknowledge to one another whatever joy we might be holding in a brief way, to acknowledge to one another whatever concern or sorrow we might have. It's also a time for us to reflect on the message of this service. Today, we're going to begin with a particular acknowledgement of the Transgender Day of Remembrance and Resilience. And so I'll turn over to Phil and to Anne for that part.
Good morning. I'm Phil Manis, and I'm here with Anne Rostosky. We are two members of the Fellowship Welcoming Congregation team. During November each year, we have commemorated the Transgender Day of Remembrance and Resilience with an evening vigil. Obviously, this year, that was not possible. So we would like to take some time to acknowledge and remember these beautiful and loving souls whose lives were taken this year. Although we will never know the total number of transgender and gender nonconforming human beings killed so far this year, we do know of 350 violent deaths worldwide. Of those, 36 deaths occurred in the United States, and two of these were in Philadelphia.
The first, Dominique Remy Fells, was a Black transgender woman who was killed in Philadelphia on June 9th. One personal friend posted online, "Dom was a unique and beautiful soul who I'm lucky to have known personally. We need to fight. We need to do more. We will get justice."
Philadelphia's second victim this year was Mia Green, a 29-year-old Black transgender woman who was killed on September 28th. Her friends and family shared how her smile was so perfect and so contagious. She made us laugh.
I'd like to share a few words by Paul Langston Daly. This is a day of remembrance, to recall those whose very being was not seen as a divine gift, but seen instead as different and dangerous. We mourn their loss, their contribution to this world cut short. And in these times, when all we have worked for seems to be unraveling, I see a call not just for justice, I see a call not just for remembrance, but also for resistance and resilience. We hold within each of us the spark of the divine, the love of the divine, the image of the divine. Even as we face the death of so many of our siblings, we recognize the power of our struggle, not just for our own liberation, but for the liberation of all. Resilience comes from the longing and belonging and love of community, from the memory of those who have gone before us, for them, because of them. We remember, we resist, we are resilient.
We'd like to acknowledge and express gratitude to Lilia Weber for the creation of our fellowship annual vigil. At these vigils, we have always had candles and read the names of victims. This year, we honor our country's victims with 36 stones for sorrow and with candles for the light they were in the world. Please join Anne and me in remembering them and recognizing the resilience and the courage with which they lived their truth.
So if you have a joy or a concern or a gleaning from the service that you'd like to share, we'll allow you to do that now.
Please join me in these words as we extinguish our chalice flame. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again.
So our closing song is Wondrous Love The lyrics will appear on the screen, and let's join together in this short song with one another before we have our announcements in our breakout groups today.